How will you disrupt yourself?
On today's show.
And the blog posts were really just like an image and a sentence. Like, here's a lamp and like, look at this cool lamp I found. Like that was a blog post, right? This is again before Pinterest, before Instagram, before any of that stuff.
Welcome to the Disrupt Yourself podcast, a podcast where we discuss strategies and advice for how to climb the S-curve of learning in both your professional and personal life, disrupting who you are to slingshot into who you want to be. I'm your host, Whitney Johnson, and today's guest is Gabrielle Blair, a woman whose life has been full of disruption, of playing where no one else is playing, beginning with her lifestyle blog, Design Mom, which she started in 2004, a blog focused on the intersection of motherhood and design, which was a Time Magazine blog of the year in 2010. She then founded Alt Summit, the premier summit for creative entrepreneurs and social media content creators. Gabrielle is a New York Times bestselling author of the book Design Mom, How to Live with Kids, about which the San Francisco Chronicle said it's a thoughtful take on how to create beautiful, well-organized, functional family spaces and a cool parenting handbook to boot. She is the wife of one and mother of six with children ranging in ages from 9 to 22. Gabrielle, welcome.
Thank you so much, Whitney. What a delight to be here.
So that our listeners can get to know you, can you tell us a bit about where you grew up and what you thought you were going to be when you grew up?
Absolutely. So I grew up, well, I was born in California, but we moved to St. George, Utah when I was five. And I'm one of eight kids. I'm number five in the lineup. And growing up, I thought I was going to be an interior designer. I knew I liked design and creative stuff right away. And my mom understood that I liked that and that I was good at that. And she would let me design my room and help me, you know, like I remember even being age five, maybe six, we were just new to St. George. And she took me to pick out wallpaper for my room. And I just sat with those wallpaper books for, you know, hours, just like, wow, what, you know, what are the options? But I got to college and the design program was like a separate kind of category, but you had to apply to. I applied to it during my freshman year. And so I started in interior design. I really disliked the program. Like I did not like it at all. It was maybe more too heavily architecture. I was just doing a lot of drafting and stuff. I didn't love it. And I was walking around the design building, looking at the assignments that were on the wall and was going, whoa, who gets to do this stuff? I was just looking at this beautiful work. And they said, oh, those are the graphic designers. I had never heard of graphic design, like never heard of it. I'm already a sophomore in college. And I started looking into it and it was like, oh, this is for me. This is great. Partly because I knew I wanted a big family, even in college, imagining, okay, well, how can I have kids, but also work? And how would that work? You know, what would that look like? And you know, maybe there's something I can do at home. And interior design had seemed like maybe that could work, but I had worked at, you know, shops as an intern in the summer and knew that it wasn't really a home thing. Like you're in other people's homes. You're not in your home. Like you're really out and about. And then I saw graphic design. It was like, oh, you need a computer. That's it. Like I can, you know, the internet exists. I can do this. And I really, really loved it. And so I reapplied and got into the graphic design program. And that's where I ended up. And I ended up doing an internship in Athens, Greece at Ogilvy & Mather. And I ended up moving to New York and I was art director there. And I worked in advertising for lots of years. And then, weirdly, have ended up doing a lot of interior design since I left that and started blogging. So, I knew I would be in design, thought it would be interiors, have ended up there. But it turns out the principles of design really work across disciplines. So the same principles that are used in fashion are used in interiors, are used in graphic design.
Isn't that interesting? And I do think that is kind of ironic because your book, your New York Times bestselling book is all about designing spaces for children. So it's interesting how the thing that wasn't working so often we end up coming back to in some sort of, we iterate back to it. Okay. So you decided you're going to do graphic design. You go to New York, you're having this career. And then at some point you get married and you have children. Right. Tell us about sort of what happened and how this idea for the Design Mom blog came out. Set the stage for us, the year, right. Feelings, et cetera.
I'm living in New York. I'm working as an art director. It is year 2006, and I have just had baby number 5. Now, I'm 31 at this point, and my peers in New York, they are just getting married. They are maybe having their first baby. Like, that's kind of where they're at, my 31-year-old peers, right? And here I am, just had baby number 5. And I was clearly so odd. It would just be these weird conversations, like another pregnant woman that was about my age would see me in an elevator on the way up to, you know, working in a big skyscraper. And of course, they want to bond, like, oh, how are you feeling? You know, how's this pregnancy? And I know they're going to ask, is this your first? And I'm like, don't ask. Because if I say, actually, it's my fifth, they're going to shut up because they feel like they have nothing to add to the conversation, right? They're going to be like, I've already experienced it all. So I mean, sometimes I would just lie, yeah, it's my first, I'm excited, you know, just because it's not worth, you know, making someone uncomfortable. But I was just in this weird position where I had all this mothering experience and my peers didn't. And I was also a designer. And at that time, 2006, there was a particular sort of renaissance of design for everybody. Target was doing its very first collaborations with designers. You know, now they have a new one every season, but like this was kind of the first time they were doing it. Martha Stewart came out with a magazine called Blueprint that was aimed at kind of my age at the time, women. I mean, the tagline, I'm pretty sure, was design your life. It was very like, it was all about like consciously designing and curating your life. And I was ready to do, you know, I had baby number 5, I'm on maternity leave, and just going, I can't go back to work right now. Like, if there's anything I can do at home, I got to do it now. And I had, you know, remembered wanting to figure out a way to work at home. The opportunity cost of being at work was not worth it at those ages. I needed to have some years where I could just do the kids or at least had a really flexible schedule. And at the same time, I knew very well that I'm very prone to postpartum depression if I'm not doing something creative. So I can't just like give up work, right? Like that wasn't an option either. I know I'd go crazy, very literally. So I was trying to figure out what to do, and blogging was just kind of starting. I mean, it'd been around. I remember reading a lot of personal essay blogs at work, but design bloggers were just starting. I remember Design Sponge existed, Oh Joy existed, and the blog posts were really just like an image and a sentence. Like, here's a lamp and like, look at this cool lamp I found. Like that was a blog post, right? This is again, before Pinterest, before Instagram, before any of that stuff. And so I was watching that and I had read these personal essay blogs and been interested, but felt like I'm not a writer. I don't know how to do that. I'm a slow writer when I do write, like this wasn't gonna work. But design blogging, I could see like, oh, I could do that. I can do an image and a sentence. I could do that. So then it was, what should I do? You know, what would the topic be? And I knew what the topic should be because of these peers that I was constantly getting questions from. I'd been a mom for lots of years. So they wanted advice. I'm like, what do you do for a first birthday party? Who are you inviting? You know, the one-year-old doesn't have friends yet. Like, how does that work? And they'd want to know, like, where do you find cute toddler shoes? And where, you know, just those kinds of questions. And I knew. And they wanted to know, not just because I was a parent, but because I was a designer. They cared that I was going to tell them where the cute toddler shoes were. And so I knew exactly what I should write about. And so I called myself Design Mom from the beginning. And I was at Blogspot, designmom.blogspot.com. And just started writing. The first blog posts are still there. If you go to my blog, I think the first one I wrote about was these bubble wands that, it was just stuff. And people loved it. I just got really lucky on timing and what people wanted to talk about right then. And this was before Google Analytics, but there was a company called Traxy that offered analytics. And I remember, you know, so implementing Traxy and looking and going, wait a minute, there are 100 people that came to my blog today? Because, you know, there might be 3 comments. Well, I just was just shocked. Uh-huh. And of course, 100 doesn't sound like a lot, and I have far more readers now, but this was a big deal to me in 2006. So I was trying to figure out a way to, you know, get more of them to comment or like to participate. I wanted other readers to understand that there were a lot more people there than they thought. You know, they might think there's only you see three comments, you think, okay, me and these three commenters are reading. And a lot of my local friends assumed they were the only ones reading. Of course, you know. So I came up with this idea and I reached out to a high school friend of my husband's who had a little online shop called Darley Bird. And I said, hey, you know, what if I promote your shop and I, you know, do a giveaway? Like the term giveaway wasn't really a thing yet. But I said, if I give this prize and they comment, and that's how they enter to win. So she agreed and we did it. And I believe I got 70 comments and people were freaking out, like in the comments, like, who are these people? Like people that knew me are like, what is happening? And I'm getting phone calls like, who are these complete strangers that are commenting on your blog? And it was the first, I've been credited as the first blog giveaway, which I know then became just like a thing. But I did this first thing because I was trying to figure out how to get them to comment. And the way I structured it was like, you can say anything. You can say cool earrings, which was the prize, or you can say, I love this shop, or you can say whatever you want, you know, like just try to make it really easy. And anyway, it worked. And from then on, I did giveaways, but I also did, you know, just got much more comments once people could see there were a lot of people there.
I didn't realize that you had been credited with starting a giveaway.
Yeah. So then it was like, and within 24 hours, I had comments from maybe 50 other bloggers across all sorts of fields saying, can I do this? Can I copy and paste your instructions? Cause I'm like, yeah, go for it.
Love it. I think it's really interesting. I said at the very beginning, like you've been a disruptor. And one of the things that we think about is disruption is you play where no one else is playing. You take on market risk. Mm-hmm. Like that is one of the principal tenets is that when mm-hmm. you take on market versus competitive risk, you're six times more likely to be successful. And so it's interesting. Like in starting Design Mom, definitely market risk, right? I mean, right. You were super early, probably one, like you said, people are like, what is this? And then people started commenting. You realize that there was an opportunity. There was no competition, huge opportunity. And then with the giveaways, super interesting. And we're going to talk a little bit more about some more market risk that you've taken in just a minute. One of the things I think has been really fun for me to observe over the years, because I've followed you for well over 10 years, is one of the things that you said is you wanted to create a home where parents and kids can thrive. And I just saw on your blog that you had this photo shoot in Central Park, I think last summer, 2019.
August 2019.
August of 2019. But you had done a similar photo shoot in the summer of 2009. And so being able to see the growth of your children. And so one of the things that I was wondering is, as you think about this decision you made to start this blog, and you didn't know what it was going to be, but you had a problem that you needed to solve. And so you said, I'm going to solve this. What have been some very special, memorable moments with your family or your children that they've said, like, wow, I can't believe that we've gotten to do this or have this experience as a family that would not have come about had you not started that blog? Does anything come to mind?
Yeah, a couple of things. One of them is both of them related to photos, but one of them is a practical thing. And my kids talked about, and a few of them have mentioned it independently, that when they need a photo of themselves, like they get an assignment at school or they need a family something, or they just need a photo, they go to Google and put in their name or my name or whatever. And here's all this stuff. I'm not saying that's for everyone, but my kids have loved that there's just this resource for them of that they can show anyone at any time. And they feel like it's fun to show off to their friends because their friends put in their name and don't necessarily see anything. And they get hundreds of pages of just like these photos of their family. But the other thing is they have really loved the record of themselves. While we were still in New York, so this has been pretty much the history of the blog, I started doing a what to wear to school series, like what to wear to kindergarten, what to wear to first grade. And really would just photograph my kids' kind of first day of school outfit or a couple outfits they had and for each grade and post them. The content was supposed to be helpful, like, hey, this is kind of what I'm putting my kids in right now. This is what I think is cute kids fashion-wise. Here are links if you want to shop these. And it was also a chance to talk about, here's how we incorporate hand-me-downs. You know, this is what lasts. This is what doesn't. This is what I'm looking for as far as quality. And I've ended up doing that every year. So my kids have this record of themselves of what they wore that school year and what they looked like, what their hair was like. for really since they were just little kids, and they love it. It's not even a professional photographer. It's just me with the, you know, with the camera somewhere in our home. Anyway, that's been lovely. They really do treasure that. I don't have pictures of me in all my outfits every school year. But if I did, he would love that. If my husband had that, my kids would love to be able to see that. And I'm glad they have that now. I mean, what a treasure.
Isn't that interesting? And they're being able to have this milestone every year of what they were wearing. And the other thought that comes to me as you were talking about this is that I think as a parent, I think for most parents, we want to somehow convey to our children that they matter to us. And we continually are resetting and recommitting to put our children and our family and our spouses and husbands and wives and partners first. And there's something about when you said that, I thought, you know, when you take that picture of them every year and also throughout the year, there's something very physical, very tangible that you are saying, you are in front of me. I see you. You matter. And so they not only have this milestone, but there's something I think psychological and emotional that they feel because of that. Does that sound right to you?
I haven't thought of that, but I love that. Yeah. Here's proof I was loved and taken care of, you know, that someone was clothing me and thinking I was beautiful enough to take pictures of and wanted to share this. And yeah, they really do love it. And and what a treasure for me, of course, you know, as a parent.
Oh, I just got chills when you said that. And you know what's really very lovely about that is that, you know, again, watching you, you've gotten your children have gotten some sort of big opportunities, I think, in terms of being able to go places, et cetera, as a consequence. Yeah. And so I think it's very lovely. It's just those small moments of that picture every year that matters to them. You've lived in a lot of different places now.
I have.
Can you talk to us a bit about the rationale and maybe one or two places that you've moved and how those decisions that you and your husband have made and your family perhaps to move has played into this intersection of motherhood and design, and just a little bit about that.
So in New York, when I started Design Mom, my husband was finishing his PhD. He was at Columbia. His first full-time job once he'd gotten his PhD was actually with K12.com, which is not a university. And it was a virtual job. They were based in DC, but they hired him in New York. And he was just expected to work from home, work virtually. Well, he was working virtually and I was working virtually. And we were still living in New York. And going, well, it's probably dumb for us to live in this very expensive place, the most expensive place in the country at the time, when we barely leave the house. Like we're not working in the city anymore. So, but we could go anywhere, you know, like it was fun, but it's kind of weird. Typically in America, your job determines where you live and when you move there. Like that's, you get hired and that's why you move and when you move. And we were just having to decide to move somewhere. So we were not a joke. We would like do searches for, okay, what's the best quality of life and what's the lowest cost of living? And what's it, you know, like what's, how do you narrow this down? And doing those kinds of searches, we ended up narrowing it down to Portland, Austin, or Denver. And all those years in New York, we had spent any sort of vacation money we had saved up would always get spent traveling west to go see family. But we would always just feel like we were going to Utah or California. So that ended up making us decide, okay, well, let's go somewhere that we can drive. And Austin and Portland were a little too far to drive to see family. That's how we picked Denver. So we got to Denver and we really, the intention was we are going to put down roots. This is going to be where we live. So we got there, started renting a house and looking around and figuring out where do we want to live. And we couldn't find anywhere. Lots of really darling neighborhoods. We really have only good things to say about Denver and would recommend anyone live there. But we just weren't, we're having a hard time finding that place to put down roots, that particular house or neighborhood. And so we were saying, okay, well, what else? And we thought, well, we've always wanted the kids to have an international experience and maybe this is the time. We don't have anyone in high school yet. Our oldest was in seventh grade and we started going, okay, we could do this. We could we'll leave in the middle of seventh grade and come back in the middle of eighth grade. We'll take a year abroad and he won't miss seventh grade and he won't miss eighth grade and he'll feel like he's fine. Their kids are very social. They make friends easily and quickly, and then they don't want to leave them, right? So, but they could get on board with a year abroad. They thought that was okay. And we ended up picking France because we both studied some French in high school. So we at least had a little bit of head start there. So we had put in a search on a website called sabbaticalshome.com. And we put in that we wanted a house that would sleep eight people. We had baby number six in Denver. So yep. Now we're a family of eight. So we're looking for a house that will fit eight people. And we want it within 2 hours of Paris. And it needs to be furnished. One house came up with that criteria. And it happened to be in a little town called Argentan, or kind of right outside of town. And it was stunning. It was restored by this artist, this local artist. And it was just gorgeous. And this artist had a couple of little kids. So there's a treehouse in the backyard and a trampoline. And oh, and it was the same price rent as our rent in Colorado. So it was like, oh, this is amazing. So we moved and we assumed we were going to do a year, and we loved it. And we kept extending. So we'd do 6 months and extend again 6 months and extend again 6 months. And we just loved it. It was this really magical time. We started a video series while we were there. That ended up changing my husband's whole career. We lived in the countryside. And our kids didn't have a ton of other kids around them during the, you know, unless they were at school. And they just bonded and were so close and did constant projects together, constantly making movies, art projects, you know, going on hikes in the country, riding bikes. It was just, I don't know, this incredibly bonding time. And then France has this amazing school schedule as well, where you get every 6 weeks, there's a 2 week break. So since we could both work at home, that means we could also work on the road while we're traveling. So we'd take these amazing trips. We just jump in the car and let's drive to Switzerland. Let's drive to the Netherlands. Let's drive to Ireland. You'd get, you know, drive right onto a ferry and a ferry takes you to Ireland. So it was this really magical time and definitely changed our whole family in really positive ways. And the kids are really frank about like, oh yeah, that changed everything. We assumed we'd move back to Colorado, but ended up getting recruited to Oakland by my sister who lived in San Francisco. And I had a brother also in San Francisco. And so it was like, oh, come on, let's have our little.
I love how you say recruited. They recruited us.
They did. They did. Again, we ended up in this amazing house and just remarkable, and also was a big influence on us during those years. So we're in Oakland for 6 years. And that really ended up being, it's sort of the same decision as when we left New York. It was like Oakland, even just in the 6 years we've been there, house prices have doubled, maybe more than that. I mean, it's just and when the house prices go up, everything goes up. Again, we're both working at home. Why are we living in this town that has horrible commutes? Like, you know, if we do need to go to the city to go see my sister or just have for a meeting, it's just a nightmare. You know, like, why are we doing this? So we said, well, where should we go? And we ended up going, well, we really miss France. And our younger three didn't have the same memories. They were really young and they didn't have the same memories as the older ones. So we said, I think we got to go back to France. So we moved in August and it's awesome. We love it. Yeah. We really do love it.
So I see many more 6 month extensions in your future. All right. Let's talk about Alt Summit. I've been, just for everybody who's listening, I've been a couple times. It is, and I'm not a creative, like in the traditional sense of being a creative, it is so much fun and so much joie de vie and just color and creativity. And it really is that intersection of creativity and definitely has this large contingent of mothers, et cetera. But I'd love for you to share how this started. I know you've got one coming up this year. Just tell us a little bit about Alt Summit and how it happened.
So I love talking about Alt Summit. So sorry, I'm going to jabber. But I was living in New York still. Design Mom was about a year old. I went on a trip with my brothers and sisters and our spouses. It was really fun. And I'm not the only design blogger in my family. My sister's also a design blogger, and my sister-in-law is also a design blogger. So we were all there.
Wait, what are their names for everybody?
Oh, sorry.
In the case they want to go.
So my sister is Jordan Fernan. Her blog is ohappyday.com. Okay. And my sister-in-law is Liz Stanley, and her blog is sayyes.com.
Okay.
And they've been blogging for as long as I have. In fact, Jordan started 2 months before me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we're in Mexico, and we're talking about conferences. And my sister and sister-in-law were not mothers yet, but I was. And I would go to mom blogging conferences. Well, like Blogger, which was almost all moms. And then I helped put on the very first Mom 2.0 conference, Mom 2.0 Summit. And I would go to these conferences. I loved them. It was just really fun to talk shop about blogging. And, you know, like, you don't have coworkers. So it was like so delightful to just go and, you know, hear about Blogspot and WordPress updates and say, wow, Blogspot's been bought by Google. And I mean, just like stuff that, you know, was so exciting to us. And I'm talking about Traxy, you know, and anyway, all this stuff.
Right.
And, but my sisters hadn't gone because it was really so mom focused, number one, and number two, so writer focused. It wasn't visual. And a lot of these things didn't really have a visual element yet. When Twitter launched, there was no visual element. When Facebook launched, there was barely a visual, you know, like it wasn't where all these design bloggers were so visual. None of the speakers were women that my sisters wanted to hear from, you know, at the conferences that I went to. Whereas for me, it was, I lived in this, you know, mom world and design world. So we were sitting there going, well, why don't we do a conference for design bloggers? Let's do that. And my sister, Sarah, who's great at organizing and, you know, has done a lot of political event planning, said, oh, great, we could do this. Like I'll plan it and you will do the, you'll do like the content, you know, you'll invite the speakers, you know who invite. So, so we did, and it was awesome. I mean, like even from the beginning, our first panel at the first conference had Grace Bonney of Design Sponge, who, you know, really established the whole design blogging community, and Maxwell, of Apartment Therapy, which is still out there going strong. And, you know, he's again hugely influential. I mean, we didn't know at the time, but it was a big deal. And I loved it. I got to hear from all these women that I have been following, and I got to meet them in real life, and it was wonderful. But then I went home and I realized, oh, they're expecting us to do it again. Like I hadn't really thought past the first one, you know, it was like,
that was fun.
Can we just pull this off? Right. You know? And so that was this weird thing because I already had this business. I had Design Mom and it took up a ton of time and I had this big family. I was already doing a lot of stuff. So I shared this conference with my sister and she would handle the organization and she would run the sales team and then I would just do content. And then about 3 years ago, my sister was ready to retire. Her husband was retiring from politics. She was like, okay, I'll be done with Ultima 2. We're going to go on to this next phase of our life. So she sold her have the company to me. And all of a sudden now I'm like in charge.
In that transition, what was the biggest challenge for you of you taking that stake? And now what was scary about it?
Well, so the scary thing was, I just had been able to share that responsibility, right? If something wasn't working, it never felt like it was all on my shoulders. We shared ownership of the company. And that's awesome. And all of a sudden it was just me. So if it's failing or if there's a financial risk, it's all on me versus just sharing. And there's something lovely about having a business partner, right? Like to share some of that, share some of the pressures, share some of the risks. It was all on me. And we were trying.
So what did you do? What did you do?
I reinvented really is what we did. We said, okay, let's go to Palm Springs. Let's pick a hotel that's less expensive. We've been at a really luxury hotel in Salt Lake City. And we said, let's go to a less expensive hotel because we needed a younger audience coming in. We needed, we just needed some kind of fresh attendees. And we knew lowering the cost of the hotel would really help. And then that also allowed us to lower the cost of the tickets. So we dropped the price of the tickets and really thought, okay, this is for kind of people that haven't been before. We also chose Palm Springs and this particular hotel in Palm Springs because it was just so Instagrammable. The whole hotel, it's called the Saguaro Hotel. It's a rainbow. It's just literally a rainbow. And, you know, every wall is a different color and this beautiful spectrum you're surrounded by the whole time. And our social shares went up that year by 30%. And it is 100% because we changed the location to this place where most of the conference was outdoors, and Instagrammers love natural light versus like being in a conference room where it's really hard to get a great shot. So we had so much stuff happening outside where you're getting great light in this rainbow backdrop. I mean, it was just gorgeous. And Palm Springs was like the hot town to visit and the super cool. It was like, you know, towns get popular, and this was, it's still in its heyday, or its second heyday. We just said, okay, this lowers our cost, it lowers our risk. Then we sold out in about an hour. And then once that happened, it was like, okay. And I could really calm down. But then it was also just this, a different workflow, a different balance. And I didn't want to give up Design Mom. I still haven't. I love Design Mom. And Design Mom had been my main source of income. Ultimate was a supplement. But I needed to work more on Alt Summit. So trying to figure that out. Like, how much money should I be trying to earn from Alt Summit versus Design Mom to balance that out? So, and that just took figuring out. And I'm still always figuring that out.
Do you feel like you've made the shift now from a business model perspective?
Yeah. I mean, I would say I'm now more Alt Summit funded than Design Mom funded, but could always switch it if I needed to. I mean, like, Design Mom can make money when it needs to. I just have to put the time into it. You know what I mean? So that's nice. That's really nice.
That's interesting. And good that you got those two streams of income that you can toggle back and forth between.
That also helps me feel like all of this is less of a risk.
Yeah.
You know, like, because I it's not all my eggs aren't in one basket.
Was there a book that you read when you were figuring out how to shift that was influential for you? A book that you read or a person that you talked to that really helped you in make this transition from having a business partner to being the CEO of the company on your own? Was there something that was influential in your business thinking?
It was more than a book. I was talking to other conference owners. So about that time, I went to, I don't even know how this came about, but basically this back to Mexico for this little retreaty thing, but it was a bunch of us that had started conferences at about the same time.
Yep.
We got together in Mexico and it was organized by Barbara Jones, who had founded Blistem, and she basically gave us all a spotlight. You know, we all took a turn where basically said, here's the history of my company. Mm. Here's the problems we're having. You know, here's the challenges
mastermind
that I need. Yeah, I get. Yeah, you're right. I don't think I've ever officially participated in the mastermind, but I was essentially that. And that was incredibly helpful. Mm. That was incredibly helpful. And that really helped me get a vision for, okay, what is it that I want out of this? And what am I doing? We did 2 years in Palm Springs. And then last year's conference made a major shift that was maybe the biggest disruption I think I've done with Alt Summit ever. I was looking for another location. We would sell out at this Rainbow Hotel in an hour. And then people were furious at us for the next 8 months that there were no other tickets. But we're just maxed out. It's not a huge hotel. And I knew, because I looked at every locale in the country, that your options are gorgeous luxury hotel, but everyone's in conference rooms, or cool, quirky, you know, more boutique hotel, but you are maxed out at 500, 700 attendee, you know, like something like that. And your keynote's probably going to be like outside by the pool. There is no room where you can all be together. And that limits your growth. But then if I go to a big, you know, luxury hotel, I'm going to lose all those Instagram share. I'm going to lose all the social. It's just not going to have the same feeling. So I was really stuck, just stuck. Like, what do I do? And I could not solve this problem. And then I remembered I had gone to South by Southwest for a few years in there. And I remember all of a sudden went, oh, you go and you go to the conference center and you get, you know, your badge. And then you're like at 10 different venues around town. Like, you're never back. It's not like in one location. It's everywhere. There are classes in every hotel. There are classes in, you know, anyone that's got AV and a meeting room has House by South by Southwest content. But they have like 50 classes going at any one time all day long, right? And that just did this click for me. And I was like, oh, I could use all the cool hotels in Palm Springs. None of them are big enough. But if I'm using all of them, I can have 2,000 attendees going instead of 500 or 700 because there's classes all over the place. Now, we still needed a place for a keynote. there still needs to be a place where all the attendees, if I have 2,000, can be together. And so we basically said, okay, well, if you can do a conference hotel, one of those big luxury hotels with conference rooms, as long as we have these other cool places where most of the photos will be taken. Does that make sense? And if 3,000 people want to come, I just add a few more cool hotels. There's a million of these smaller hotels that have meeting spaces, just not big enough for 2,000 people or 3,000. But anyway, so I tested it last year. It was awesome. I did it last year. It was super scary and we didn't make any money last year because it was like a whole new thing. It was for sure the biggest risk that I've taken. We were just at these amazing locations that we couldn't fit a whole conference at. And I felt like I was giving this gift to these attendees who got to see these locations they wouldn't have gotten to go to, you know, like lovely hotels or just play, you know, parties at these wonderful spaces that they would have no reason to be in if they didn't have something like this conference. And it makes it scalable.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was super.
Yeah. Fun. So you learned Alt Summit learned from the South by Southwest model, which is
absolutely
is just massive. Yeah.
Yeah.
And last year, something very special happened. There was a very sweet Instagram post by Fixer Uppers Joanna Gaines. Tell us that story of what happened last year.
Absolutely. So it actually starts with Design Mom. So Design Mom and Alt Summit are separate entities, but sometimes they do have some overlap. So on Design Mom, typically every Tuesday, I publish a home tour. And yes, it's got tons of pictures of someone's home, but it's also like a parenting interview where they're talking about how they live with kids. Like, what are your tips? How do you organize things? What's the part of your home that you hope your kids never forget? And what's the part you hope they don't remember? And you'll have lots of moms saying, well, I yell. I hope they forget I yell, you know, but it's a beloved part of the blog. And several years ago, I featured a designer in Texas called Joanna Gaines. And we did a home tour. And it was her first kind of public home tour. She was trying to start a design company. And about a week after I published the home tour, she got a call from HGTV, folks that were like looking, you know, scouting, and they read my blog and they were scouting and they contacted her. And I got an email from her saying, hey, because of the home tour, I've got this pilot with HGTV. So I wrote a blog post about that. Look, how cool. You know, we did this home tour and now she's got this pilot. Well, the pilot was successful. I mean, it has just taken off. And so Joanna Gaines, we had never met in person, but we'd always exchanged emails or whatever, just like, oh, congrats on this, or, you know, this is huge. And she was always sweet. Like, I get all of a sudden a bunch of emails from someone going, I didn't know Joanna Gaines, you know, was discovered on your blog, but she would have mentioned it in her university magazine or, you know, things like that. So she was always really cute to mention it. And for the last few years, I had invited her to come to Alt Summit and be the keynote speaker. And she hadn't been available. She's shooting or something's going on. But she was always very sweet about it. And I said, well, don't be mad, but I'm going to ask you again next year. So just be prepared. I'd love you to come. So last year, I reached out and said, I'm back. What's your schedule looking like? And she wrote back right away and said, told them I definitely wanted to come this year to clear my schedule. I'm coming. It was wonderful to meet her. Like, feel like she's a long time friend and business associate for all these years, but had never met in person. And we both have these big families and our kids have a lot of similar ages. And it was, just delightful to meet her. And she's every bit as lovely as you hope she would be in person. And she brought her little baby and it was just wonderful. She did an excellent keynote.
Oh, and this was your 10th conference, right?
This was the 10th. Well, it was our 10-year anniversary, our 15th conference and 10-year anniversary. Yeah, it was awesome. So special to have her there.
One of the things that I love, and Macy, our podcast producer, and I were talking about before the conversation, is that one of your missions, your just cause, if you will, if we put it in Simon Sinek's words, is to elevate women's voices. And I just wanted to give you a quick shout out and on that is that sometimes we think about elevating women's voices as elevating our own voice. And one of the things I think you've done so beautifully is you've elevated other women's voices. And so just thank you for that.
Well, thanks for saying it. I definitely feel like if I have a mission, that's it. If I have some purpose, I'm out here and I'm supposed to elevate, amplify, you know, get these women's voices out there. So I love to do it. It makes me feel awesome. And it's just really important to me.
Yeah. I want to come back to the conference, Alt Summit, where people can learn more about it. I want to just ask one more question as we start to wrap up, and that is about Ben Silberman and Pinterest, which yeah. I think is such a, you know, I've heard anecdotally a little bit of the story, but I think our listeners, you know, everybody who's listening to this knows of Pinterest. And so I think it'd just be really fun to hear about the intersection between Pinterest and Alt Summit, if you'd share it.
Absolutely. So let me just start by saying Ben Silberman is just a stand-up guy, just an awesome, awesome guy. And at an early Alt Summit, I feel like it was year number two, Ben Silberman came. And he just came as an attendee. And he was definitely looking for visual social media people. So that would have been design bloggers at the time. And he showed up at the conference as an attendee. He had his laptop with his tiny beta version of Pinterest. And it was, you know, it had his family and friends using it. He's a pretty introverted, shy kind of guy. And he would just have these little conversations one-on-one and say, hey, will you check out this project I'm working on? And this crowd was eating it up. It was a badly needed tool for visual people. Like it was like, yeah, I mean, I was using Delicious. I was trying to save stuff. I'd have a file on my desktop of visual stuff. Like I was constantly trying to save visual things and there was no good way to do it. And so this crowd was all design bloggers and they had all the same issue. So he would go show this little beta and instantly people were like, oh yeah, how? Like what, how can I sign up, right? He didn't know who he was meeting. He was just talking to any attendee, but he ended up aligning or connecting with some really influential people. Everyone was kind of a small design blogger at the time, but a lot of these ended up having huge audiences like SF Girl by the Bay and Joy Cho of Ojoy. And he really connected with some of these design bloggers with this tool that he had. And he came, so people started using it. And the next year he came back again and he was a panelist talking, I think, just about startups in general. And then the next year he came back again. And this time he was the keynote. Pinterest has taken off and every power user of Pinterest at that time is basically in the room. They're all Alt Summit attendees. They're all design bloggers and they are using Pinterest daily, constantly, and they're making Pinterest a gorgeous place. These are women with fabulous taste, great visual eye, and Pinterest was just stunning. Now you get on and there is a lot of like type on the images or things like that, you know, that it's not always beautiful. I have to go in and curate my feed. But at the time it was just stunning and it was stunning and it was only stunning. And Ben said that Alt Summit is the soil out of which Pinterest grew, that this is where he planted the tree and that's where it grew. And still, if you look at the top Pinterest users and with the top followers, they've all come to Alt Summit multiple times, have been speakers or even keynotes themselves as their audiences have grown. And yeah, we love it. They're coming back this year as a sponsor. We're so glad to have them. And we love Pinterest. Such an amazing tool for anyone visual, of course.
I love it. It makes me wonder who else is going to get discovered by Gabrielle Blair. I'm sure there will be more. All right. So Alt Summit, tell us when it is this year, what you've got coming up. And if people do want to participate, even at this late date, is that even a possibility?
Yes. So it's happening March 1st through 6th. And because of this scalability, we have a policy where we don't sell out, like on purpose. We say, keep coming. We have so many people that want to speak and so much attendees that we will just continue to scale it. We had over 1,400 pitches this year for speakers for our pretty limited number of spots. So you can still buy tickets. You go to altitudesummit.com. The original name was Altitude Summit. Everyone just calls it Alt Summit for short. And so you can go to altitudesummit.com, which is the URL, and tickets are there, info's there. You can see it's not too late. So jump in if you want to.
And then anybody who's listening will include in the show notes, you know, the Design Mom blog, et cetera, so that you can find Gabrielle. Okay. As we wrap up, I have two final questions for you. One is, what are you most happy about when you think about the work that you have been doing for the last 15 years? I'm not going to ask you about your children, because I know you would say your children and your family. So professionally, what are you most happy about?
I get an email at least once a week, if not more, of someone saying, hey, I just launched a company because of a partner I met at Alt Summit, or you featured my shop on Design Mom and we sold out at Christmas and we've just grown and expanded, or, hey, I just launched a TV show with the Jim Henson Company because we met them at Alt Summit and we pitched them in the elevator. And I mean, I just get it constantly, and it just couldn't make me happier. It is, I have a platform. I didn't know I was going to have a platform, but I have one. What can I do with it? How can I, you know, help as many people as possible? So I love it. And I especially love that so many of the emails I get are related to these women's businesses. Like, I think that's such an empowering thing to have women earning money, growing a company that they own and they have control over. That's, I mean, that's just as powerful as you can be. Like, that's it. And it's an independence that's so important for women. Anyway, that makes me super, super happy.
It's beautiful. Any final advice for, or any final words as we conclude?
My best advice is, if you're doing anything on the internet, really anything at all, because it's all, you're going to have a website, you're going to have some kind of internet presence, is start, like, stake your claim, because no one's watching it first. So just get out there and start, and have the website that's not quite perfect or the Instagram feed that's not exactly what you wanted, but just start, because it's the internet and you can go back and edit it constantly. So you don't like your logo, change it. It's not like printed letterhead. Like, we used to have to really invest in signage for the outside of your shop and your printed materials. And now it's all so digital that you can change it so quickly that's it. And by putting it out there publicly, by saying, I'm going to open this shop on this date, or I'm going to start this conference, or whatever it might be, it kind of forces you to meet that goal, and to, you've made this public promise and you have to do it. And if it's not perfect, it's so changeable and editable. Just start, just get out there and start. Don't hesitate. That's my advice.
Start. Wise words from Gabrielle Blair. Thank you for being with us all the way from Normandy, France, and best wishes for this year's Alt Summit.
Thanks, Whitney. Super fun.
The ability to design and thoughtfully curate is a powerful but often underappreciated skill, one that Gabrielle has in spades. When we zoom out and look at how she's designed her life and been discovery-driven along the way, it's remarkable. She knew she wanted to do something with design that would allow her to choose to be a mother, but interior design ended up not being a good fit. So she pursued graphic design, became a mother, and then pivoted again to design blogging. From choosing where her family would live to creating Alt Summit, you can see her being driven by discovery again and again. Knowing where she wants to go, setting off on that path, and making adjustments along the way. Then reconsidering and adjusting again. And wasn't it delightful to hear that in Gabrielle's mission to amplify women's voices through her blog and conference, she's been part of the growth and discovery of some amazing people? Our producer Macy said, as we were prepping this episode, that as she's gone to Alt Summit over the years, nearly everyone has a Gabrielle story. She made an introduction, or she gave them the opportunity to speak, or provided them with a platform on her blog. And actually, I have a Gabrielle story too. Back when I was writing my Dare Dream Do blog, I decided to advertise on Design Mom and wanted to make the most of that investment by having content every day during the month that I advertised. By curating stories of women who were daring, then dreaming, and doing, I got the idea to write my first book, which then set off a chain reaction of events that in part has led to the work I do today. Which brings me to the last point. Growth happens faster in relationships. We're each growing on our own S-curves of learning, but when we can come together and help one another in mutually beneficial ways, whether in our places of work or at conferences like Alt Summit, we can accelerate that growth. Practical tip. Design an experience where you can be in the same room as people who are going to help you grow. Whether that's a lunch you schedule with a colleague, a conference like Alt Summit, or something else. Commit this week to getting something on the calendar that will help you better design your own growth. As we wrap up, here's the review of the week. We recently had a big bump in our listenership. That is in part because you are sharing your favorite episodes and takeaways on social media and are generously taking the time to leave 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. This week's review is from Max Brown. He says, "Your Simon Sinek interview went to another level with your vulnerability and lessons learned. I enjoyed the whole conversation, but your reflection at the end was awesome." Thank you, Max. This definitely was a risk to say what was really happening for me, but I realize that I cannot encourage each of you to disrupt yourself if I'm not willing to do the same. For those of you who want to listen to past episodes, including our interview with Simon Sinek, episode 143, everything is available on our website at whitneyjohnson.com/podcast. There's a complete transcript, links, and show notes for every episode. Thank you again to Gabrielle Blair for being our guest. Thank you to sound engineer Whitney Jobe, manager, editor Macy Robison, content contributors Emily Davis and Nancy Wilson, and art director Brandon Jameson. I'm Whitney Johnson, and this is Disrupt Yourself.